Tonight, we're looking at the subject, test of character. I've got here as a text, 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 15. You might turn there. We'll take a look at that. This is a passage that the first part of it might be familiar, where it says, examine yourselves. That's probably familiar to us, whether you be in the faith. That probably is as well. Prove your own selves. Know ye not your own selves how that Jesus Christ is in you, except you be reprobates. Examining ourselves. Character is something that matters. There's a number of things that we ought to be perhaps examining ourselves about. And one of those would be, you know, what's our character? Character took quite a hit a few years ago. There was a major election. I was kind of surprised. I was surprised by the whole thing. Sometimes I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Over and over, there was a cry to ignore character in the election. I said character doesn't matter. I thought to myself, yeah, the way some of you act, yeah, I think that's probably true. But there was a very vocal segment. I don't think it was the majority of the people. It's just the people that cried out the most. So it really wasn't a commentary on either candidate, I don't think, as much as it was on society in general. When people are crying out that character doesn't matter, just think about what that means. If character doesn't matter with elected officials, does it matter with us? These folks represent us. And there's no character issues that make any difference. Character, I think, is tested almost daily. Someone once said that the test of character, the best test of character for yourself, is what you do when no one is looking. Think about that for a while. It's probably true. But character soon reveals what type of character one has by what course of action one then pursues, the decisions that are made. They all come from our character. And that's the way it is in society, and you know that's the way it is with Christians as well. So tonight we're going to look at this, a test of character, and examine ourselves. Just throw out some things and we'll just see how this works. So it's not some kind of a checklist or anything like that. It's just intended for us to, you know, consider our own character. So now here's the thing. We're not saying here, well, okay, here's something, and that's this person here, and I'm going to think about them and make a call on them. No, now we're not going to do that kind of thing. This is all about us personally, measuring our lives, if you will, trying to gain the most good from something like this. And really it boils down to what do you do when you encounter certain situations? That's usually when character comes to the forefront, when there's a situation of some kind. So let's think about it that way. How about this? When there's a command that's contrary to your ideas, how do we react in a case like that? Go to the Old Testament book of 2 Kings. We're going to take a look at 2 Kings chapter 5. A man by the name of Naaman. Now Naaman, and I'm not going to go over the whole thing, but Naaman was asked to do something that was contrary to his ideas about things. He was a leper, wanted to be cleansed of his leprosy. Go see the prophet Isaiah. He did. He thought the prophet Isaiah would make a big deal out of it. But he didn't. It didn't go along with the way that Naaman thought that it ought to be done. And you see in 2 Kings chapter 5, starting in verse 10, that Elisha sent a messenger unto him, that would be unto Naaman, saying, go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. Now you think that ought to satisfy him. After all, he comes to the prophet, what do I need to do? And this is what the message is. Naaman then, and this is interesting, he was wroth. He was extremely upset about this. mad, we would say. He went away and he said, "Behold, I thought, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper." You know what? It's going to be a big deal. Maybe there will be thunder and smoke and a bunch of other things and flashes of light when all this takes place. It's going to be a big deal. That's what he thought. That bit's about going and washing the River Jordan, that's not going to do anything. That's not anything. And then, in verse 12, he compares the River Jordan back. "Oh, the rivers of Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel." Suppose they were. So what? "May I not wash in them and be clean?" No. It's supposed to be in the Jordan River. The greatness of the river, the cleanliness of the water, whatever. Got nothing to do with it. So he turned and went away wroth a while ago. Now he's in a rage. You see this? How did all this come about? Well, because there's a command contrary to his ideas. How do we act when we get a command contrary to, is this the way we do? Act like this? My goodness, boy, that's... Well, we'd say that's really extreme, and indeed it is. But we want to be careful that we don't do something like that. Acts chapter 10, go over there. Peter at the house of Cornelius. Now in Acts chapter 10, Peter gets to the house of Cornelius. And we want to take a look at verse 28. And what Peter says in verse 28, really, he's speaking for himself, but I think when he says this, he's really just saying what most Jews would have said in the same set of circumstances. "You know how it is not lawful thing for a man that is a Jew to keep company or come unto one of another nation." Cornelius was a Gentile. He was of another nation, you see. And Cornelius is there in his house. He wouldn't even go in the house, but there he was. "But God hath showed me that I should not call any man common or unclean." That's a little bit different from Naaman. Here, Peter's told to go over to the house of Cornelius. Go with these people. Don't ask any questions. Just go with them. And that's where they end up. Well, my ideas might be something different, but here's what God said. Now, you see the difference between the two of them? And it gets down finally here. That's what he learned, and he says that. He says, "God has shown me this. I've learned this." And then this later was applied when he goes back to Jerusalem and explains everything that went on there at the house of Cornelius. And you get down to Acts chapter 11 and verse 17, the last half of it. It says, "What was I that I could withstand God?" I think that we might have a better feeling about that story of Naaman if he looked at it that way. This is what God said to do, and that's what I'm going to do. Doesn't matter if it confounds all of my ideas. Why? And doesn't matter now, Peter. Now, here we go. Now, this is something that's important, too. It doesn't matter, Peter, if you've done that all of your life. I'm telling you to do something different. Now, don't just pass that off and think that that's just insignificant. No, it's not. Because there's a lot of people, when it comes down to religious matters, that won't make a change when they see what there is that they need to change because I've done it all my life. That's what I've always heard. That's what my ancestors, my mother, my father, take your pick, both, or my grandparents, and go back as many generations as you want to. I've got a friend who's a fifth generation Christian. He goes all the way back to great-great-grandpa. And that's what he believed. It doesn't matter how long it's been. God says something. It's different. What are you going to do with it? Well, you see what Peter did. You see what Naaman did. And there's lots of other things that we could, you know, kind of throw into the mix. How about something like this, you know? Hello, here we go. Let's take a look now. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 23. Now, this is something that's been in this Bible here for close to 2,000 years. And it says that the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Now, there are places in here where it also talks about the wife and her position in regard to the husband and how he's supposed to be treating her. He's supposed to be treating her fairly and justly, and as she is supposed to treat the husband, etc. But the husband's the head of the wife. Now, I'll tell you what.
I'm real sure
that nowadays that's not too popular. Is it? Why, Terry, that's an understatement you're thinking right now, right? That's been unpopular for a long time. That's been unpopular even among some who are members of the Lord's church. And don't tell me that it's not. Because I've seen it. I've seen people say, oh yes, the husband is the head of a house. Pay no attention to the fact that I'm wearing the pants. I've seen it. But that's what it says. And there's some people, you know, what are you going to do with this? Just ignore it? No, it's what it says. And it may be contrary to ideas, it may be contrary to popular things today. And the views that people have and so on. This whole thing about men and women being equal, that is the most bogus thing I've ever heard in my life. I am never, ever going to accept that. And I'll tell you why. Because they're not equal. They're not. Men and women aren't equal. The day that men give birth, I'll believe it. Until then, well, I'm not going to. But I think it's something, first of all, that's made up. It's the idea we should be striving for this. So we should be striving to reach something that's an impossibility. That makes sense. The husband's the head of the wife. That's how that works. And then here's another one. Now, this is a little bit of a broader nature. But any command about obedience, especially baptism, what do people do about that? Oh, well, I'm not accepting that. Mark chapter 16, verse 16. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. That's Jesus saying that. There's no greater authority than Jesus saying that. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. It's just like 1 plus 1 equals 2. 1, which is belief. Baptism, which is 2, which is 1, equals 2 being saved. Leave out 1, and you've got 1 equals 2? No, that won't work. Your math is all wrong. But you got people that don't... They have tried every way imaginable to argue away something like this. But what do you do? You know, it comes to a test of character when you see something in the Scriptures, and this is what it says, what do you do with it? There's a real test there. And we're probably, in our lifetime, and in our time spent as Christians, we're going to run into a lot of things like this. What do you do with this kind of thing? That's a real test of character. Here's another one. How about whenever there's criticism? Now, the first one, I'm not going to go back and read it. You know about Nehemiah. He goes back, they're rebuilding the walls around Jerusalem. They fell down. Walls were a part of the defense of a city. The temple, they've been working on it, rebuilding it. That's a great thing, but now to rebuild the temple and all that, you know, you still had to have protection for the people that would come to the temple, so there's began then to work on the walls. That's how the whole thing works together. And Sanballat was a native there to this area, and he had to make sport of what the Israelites were trying to do. Made fun of the whole nation, really, not just Nehemiah, everybody. He talks about these feeble Jews and look what they're doing. And that wall that they're building over there in verse 3, he says, well, that's just nothing. And you know the statement, don't you? He said, if a fox were to run up that wall, it'd collapse. Criticism of what Nehemiah and the Jews were doing. And you know what they did? They just kept going on and they built that wall and they built a good one. And a fox didn't knock that over. Many of their enemies had problems trying to knock that over. And then there's Paul and Silas. Look at Acts chapter 16. In Acts chapter 16, and verse 20. Now, here you see where Paul and Silas had charges against them exaggerated. They brought them to the magistrate saying, "These men, being Jews, do exceedingly trouble our city." Well, really, they weren't. But they've got to come up with something so the magistrates will listen to them. So they just kind of trump up the charges just a little bit. But nevertheless, it was criticism about that. Now, when someone goes to criticize, why, they just might exaggerate that criticism just a little bit, add a little bit to it, make it a little more juicy, if you will. Well, sometimes that happens. What do you do in a case like that? And then what about if somebody just came right out and just lied about you? Oh, that's happened in the Bible. Go to Matthew chapter 11. In Matthew chapter 11, we'll take a look at verses 18 and 19. Well, it says here that the accusation, and this is an accusation that's really directed toward Jesus. It says, John came, and Jesus is answering the charge. And he says, "John came neither eating or drinking, and they say he has the devil. The Son of Man," that would be Jesus, "came eating and drinking." He's saying what people are saying about him then. "And they say, behold, a man gluttonous and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. But wisdom is justified of her children." And you know, some of that charge there in verse 19 is true, and some of it's just an outright lie. It is true that he was a friend of publicans and sinners, and aren't we glad? But the lie there is that he was a gluttonous man and a winebibber. And the whole point of this is that, well, you said this, here comes John, and he's not eating and drinking, and you're not happy with him. Here along comes Jesus, and you say, oh, well, he's a glutton and a drunk. You're not happy with him. You just weren't happy with anybody that came along. And so we'll just tell a lie about it. We'll throw it in there with a little bit of truth. You know, a little bit of, if you throw a little bit of truth in with a great big lie, that kind of gives that truth, perhaps in some people's minds, a little bit of credibility. They'll kind of listen to it. They'll begin maybe perhaps to take it serious because, well, there's some measure of truth in here. What do we do whenever that happens? And it's liable to happen. Oh, you folks over there at Church Christ, you know those people over there. They think they're the only ones going to be saved. All those people over there, they're sanctimonious. They look down their nose at everybody else. They're judgmental. It goes on, doesn't it? What do we do whenever there's criticism like that? Mostly made up or misunderstandings, whatever it is. Kind of a test of character as to how we respond in situations like this. Now, here's another one. Be turning to Acts chapter 16. While we make this change here. Now, I think this one, now, we might get a little closer to home on this one. A test of character. How about when you don't get your way? Oh, boy, that's a test of character, isn't it? I've got 5 grandkids, and every single one of them, even Emmy down there, 4 years old, is going to tell you, she's been telling me for about 2 years, I a big girl. Yeah, I remember that. That's just exactly how she said it. We went out for lunch, her daddy and I. The other two kids were in school. And she's sitting there, and she wasn't in a high chair, and she wasn't in a booster seat. And I said, boy, just look at you. You're not in a booster seat, a high chair. And she said, I a big girl. Proud of herself. That's right. But I've got an idea. If she didn't get her way about something, you'd find out she's not too much of a big girl. She'd probably have a fit because she wasn't getting her way. I wish that there was some magic age that you got to where that all went away. I'm not just saying this on behalf of other folks. I wish it was that way with me. I wish there was some age, and you reach that age, and then that's gone, you know, when you don't get your way. But it's something that we've got to learn. It's something that we've got to work on. It's something that we've got to try to do. And I'll tell you what, you know, when things don't go our way, when there's something else now, that's a real test of character, isn't it? In Acts chapter 16, if you turn there, you know, Paul learned about this because there was one time when things just didn't go his way. And I think you'd be surprised at who was behind this. After all, it was the Lord. In Acts chapter 16, starting in verse 6, when they had gone through Phrygia and the region of Galatia, we call that Turkey today, and were forbidden of the Holy Ghost to preach the word in Asia. After they were come to Mysia, they essayed to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit suffered them not. Now here's what's happened here. They start down there on the lower side, under the, kind of the belly of Turkey. You know, Turkey kind of sticks out in the Mediterranean Sea like a peninsula. And they started out down here and they head north. Now their intentions were, when they got so far, was to just make a right-hand turn, we're going to head east. That's what all that means. You look on the map, that's what they're planning on doing. But now, they weren't allowed to do that. It says here that the Spirit was behind this, forbidden by the Holy Ghost, by the Spirit. And they passed by Mysia, it says, in verse 8, and came down to Troas. They kind of made a left-hand turn. And in a vision appeared to Paul in the night, there stood a man of Macedonia and prayed him, saying, come over unto Macedonia and help us. And after he had seen the vision, immediately we endeavored to go to Macedonia, assuredly gathering that the Lord had called us for to preach the gospel unto them. Lord didn't want us to go east, make that right-hand turn. Lord wanted us to go left, turn left and go over there, that way. Well, they didn't get their way, and what did they do? Well, they went over into Macedonia. They went on down through Macedonia, headed south, and went through all the way that way, clear down to the end of what we call Greece today. And just think about all of the good that they did. They met opposition. They had some problems along the way, but they also had a lot of success on that particular trip. And I think about this, and I just think to myself, you know, well, how do you respond? Now, I'm included in that. How do you respond when things don't go your way? You know, there are times whenever decisions need to be made. Somebody's going to make them. It doesn't matter what it is. I don't care what you're doing. There's going to be a decision made about it. Somebody's going to make a decision. I mean, move outside of the Lord's church. Somebody makes a decision. Somebody makes a call somewhere on something. If it's in sports, if it's something that you're doing, it just doesn't make any. Somebody makes this call. And then what do you do when that call is made? And what do you do if the call is made and well, we decide to do this and it seems good and you're the one that thinks that something else ought to be done? I've got a better idea. What do you do with that? How do you handle that? Now, I know in the Lord's church, there's decisions that are made by elders. And they should be made on the best possible thing for everybody. Now, I've been around elders that sometimes made decisions that might be the best for them. Well, that's not what you're supposed to be doing here. You're supposed to be looking out for the flock, not just for yourself. But nevertheless, elders are expected to make certain decisions. And then if you don't have elders, you got this other thing that's called business meetings. I'm telling you, if I'm never in another one of those things, I would be the happiest person alive. A lot of times in business meetings, there's no decisions that are made. There's just a lot of talking, a lot of fussing and carrying on. But sometimes in business meetings, there's a decision that's made. And I can tell you, most of the time, it's a split decision. And what do? When it's not something that you're in favor of. What do you do about that? Do you work to defeat it, the decision? Or do you work to make it the best it can be? I've seen both of those things done, whether the decision was made in a business meeting or whether it was made by elders. It's a test of character, see, when you don't get your way. I've got this quote. I thought it was pretty good. It applies here. This is by a man who was a preacher down in Texas. He said, "We must be willing to forego our own preferences and opinions in order to maintain unity." Right. "Prevent the offense of the weak consciences." Right. "And secure an unprejudiced hearing of the gospel. It is a true mark of maturity." Now, it's a true mark of maturity. Now watch. "When a brother can contend for an opinion, and then seeing that it is not accepted, surrender it in order to build a consensus opinion which is agreeable to all." Boy, that's just right on so many levels. Yeah, that's what it takes. So a test of character, what do I do when I don't get my way? Do I try to defeat it or do I work for it to be a success? It comes down finally to that. Now here's another one. What do you do whenever there's failure? Everybody here, anything you've ever tried, you got it done, didn't you? Right? I watch these guys on television, these professional athletes, and I think to myself, wow. I mean, those guys are really good. And there's occasions when there's some sport, all except for bowling. That sport just absolutely drove me crazy. I don't know why it looks so easy and I just can't do it. There's times I feel like, forget about rolling that ball down there. I'm ready to just hurl it down. Anyway. But I watch these guys and you think about that. I don't know one of them, LeBron James included, that made every shot he ever took. No. Or a quarterback that completed every pass. No. You know, I found something that was absolutely amazing. The man who has the most hits in Major League Baseball is Pete Rose. Probably everybody, most people, 95% of people in the United States know that. Do you know who's got the record for the most outs made? Pete Rose. How about that? Cy Young, there's an award named after him. He pitched back in the dark ages when, I don't know, you know, they didn't wear gloves or something. He won 511 games, I think. Wow. He's got the record. Nobody will ever touch that. You know who lost the most games? Cy Young, 316. Nolan Ryan struck out more people than anyone else in the history of baseball. That's right. Who walked more people? Oh, wait, it's Nolan Ryan. Failure happens. That's right. The best people can rush up somewhere to a house that's burning and think that we've saved people before, and maybe you don't. Maybe you don't. Police officers. All we're seeing right now is police officers, you know, that may fail in what people think their duty is, but how many of them actually succeed? Far more. But what do you do about failure when that comes? What do you do about failure when that comes to you? When you just come up a little short of the mark, what happens? Do you remember that Peter was in the fishing business? And the Lord encounters Peter. Now, Peter's been out fishing. And Jesus comes up to him. And let's go out fishing. And well, you know, Peter's remark is, we've toiled all the night. We've taken nothing. They were experienced fishermen all their lives. In the business. Well, last night was kind of a failure as far as fishing goes. Well, that's the fishing business, isn't it? But now, I read the rest of this, and despite the fact that last night was a failure, and despite the fact that the Lord wants to go fishing at the wrong time of the day, despite the fact the Lord wants to go out into the deep water when all the fishing was done up close to the shore, despite everything being wrong about this, and it's just got failure, as far as Peter now is concerned, as an experienced fisherman, it's just got failure written all over it. But you know what? I'll do it anyway. I don't think his expectations were as high as what the results were when he went out there. But he did, didn't he? But when you think about failure, I think sometimes, you know, people are just too easy to quit something. Oh, well, I didn't do very good at that. I'm not going to try it again. That's how it is. Sometimes that's why people aren't a success. Because, well, there was a failure and I just gave it up. I just quit. I used to like to play golf. Played more back when I lived in Indiana than any other time. Boy, I can remember one day, though, it was really a bad day. I was hitting... What's that line in Star Trek where no man has gone before? My ball went there. And it was just really something. And I was playing with the guy. He was playing about his normal game. We got about halfway through. He said, man, he said, you're really having a rough time. I was doing everything I possibly could to recover and just, you know, be halfway decent. Not. We were in a league. And he and I were a team. And boy, I mean, I come to the ninth hole and you teed up off on the dam up there and you walk down to the green and we finished that out. That was the end of it. And then you had to walk up this long way up to the hill to the parking lot. I was so glad that round of golf was over. I got up there and opened up the hatch on that car, picked up those clubs, didn't take them off that golf cart, picked up cart, bag and everything and threw it in the car. And somebody heard that and they said, are you all right? I said, I'll never play this game again. Bob was standing over there and said, he's had a bad day, you think? And boy, I fired up that rabbit. It was a diesel. When you first fire up a diesel, they clatter something terrible. And boy, it was really clattering because I went down through that road, lickety-split. Had to go up there. He had to go away from the golf course up here and turn around and then come back. So I'm up there, I'm never going to play again. I made a turn up there, came back, and as I went by, I looked over there at the golf course, and I thought to myself, boy, I hope I can play tomorrow. That's just the way it goes. You're going to have failure. But don't quit. Don't quit. Persevere. Where's the character on this? I think that this is the thing. Failure is ultimately a challenge to our commitment in anything. It doesn't matter what it is. As a parent, as a husband or a wife, a cook, an electrician, you know, whatever you're doing, teacher, whatever, a Christian, a child of God. Yeah, failure is a challenge really to our commitment. And how do we do with that? How's our character when that kind of thing comes up? Now, the last one is how about this? When there's persecution or mistreatment. In Acts chapter 14 and verse 19, here you see that Barnabas and Paul are at Lystra. And it says there in verse 19, there came thither certain Jews from Antioch and Iconium who persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul, drew him out of the city, supposing he had been dead. What did he do there? What'd they do? Well, you start reading verse 20 down through verse 27, you find that, well, Paul got up and he was all right. And you know what they did? They just kept on going with everything that they'd intended to do. The persecution, the mistreatment, that didn't stop them. And perhaps one of the more famous occasions on this line is over in Acts chapter 16, verses 22 through 24. There they were. You know, there Paul and Silas are in jail. In 22 through 24, the multitude rose up against them, and the magistrates rent off their clothes, and that's the clothes of Paul and Silas, and commanded to beat them. And after they had laid many stripes on them, they cast them into the prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely. Well, he knew what to do. He had received a charge, and he thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks. Now, the stocks were two pieces of wood that were kind of hollowed out, and so they would put their legs in there, their ankles in there. But their legs would be in there just spread just as far apart as they could get them. You couldn't walk out of there, run out of there. You couldn't even stand up when you were in the stocks. And sometimes they didn't make these, you know, they didn't come in there first and measure you and then fit you to the stocks. If you were kind of a short person and this stock might fit a big person, they threw you in there anyway. And it didn't matter how much they got you stretched out and how much it hurt. Didn't care. We're going to keep you here. And they beat them and everything else that you see. Well, what'd they do? What'd they do on this? I'm going to tell you what. They did something. I don't know if it would be what I would do. Not thought about this. But in verse 25, at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises unto God. The prisoners heard them. There are a lot of people might be sitting there fomenting an escape or making pretty much idle threats, thinking about retaliation, thinking that they were sorry for themselves, etc., etc. You know how that goes. But look what they were doing. Well, that's different. And I just wonder to myself, is that something that I might do? And then, now I'm not going to read all this. I'm sure that you've heard it before. Go to 2 Corinthians. I'll just make a comment and then we'll move on. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, starting in verse 23, and you go down to verse 28, and Paul talks about all the things that he's encountered. Prisons, seeing other people die, verse 23, being beaten, shipwrecked, and then all these things, he says, you know, perils, troubles, danger, weariness, painfulness, down in verse 27, so on, hunger and thirsting. The number of things that Paul endured is impressive. But it didn't change a thing. I've got to be honest with you. I think there's a lot of people that couldn't do it. They'd give up. There's going to be few people that could, you know, first of all, it's going to be few people that ever encounter anything like this. And then when they encounter all these things, what happens then? Well, it's going to test their character. You know, see if they've got that in them. So these are just things for us to think about in this little test of character. And we really ought to consider our answers seriously. Now again, this isn't about that other person over there and what they would do. It's what I would do in matters like this. But then there's another test of character. And that is, when you know what you're supposed to do, you know what you're supposed to do, and you ought to do the right thing. It might be that the right thing is become a child of God. Well, you know what to do then. You know that you're supposed to believe, repent, be baptized. Well, you ought to do it. It's a test of character, whether you'll do it or not. And maybe you are a child of God and there's some problem. A test of character is, what do you do about that? You do the right thing? Or do you just let it go? Say, forget it, not me. Those are all tests of characters as well. Now, if there is someone tonight that needs to obey the gospel or perhaps make correction, we'd be happy to help you to do that. This is the time and this is the place. The song that's been selected, you turn to that. And if you have a need to respond, why don't you come all together? We stand and sing.